The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now, it is available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade and the former editor of Money and George magazines, and rumor has it he has just gotten even busier. But he's found time for us. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Yes, I'm a busy person. I'm a busy person, but I always have time for
you. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, I am. So this week I came across a story about a New Jersey hospital that's actually kind of fascinating. It's being investigated for something I'd never thought about, resisting legitimate requests by several families to not resuscitate their dying relatives. Now, this is always a very difficult time in a family when a loved one is near death, perhaps, you know, near brain dead. And obviously that person can't speak for his or herself. Family has to, in some cases, imagine what that person would want. Now, that's tough enough without a hospital resisting your wishes. But that's what this story described. And then it turns out that hospitals in general have a financial incentive to keep patients alive after operations for up to 1 year. I'd never known that. So the fact is, some hospitals, too many hospitals, try to avoid recording higher death rates than the national average. Otherwise, they would face $1 million in fines. So they've got an incentive to keep the person alive despite the condition they're in and despite, in some cases, the wishes of the family itself. For example, hospitals can get dinged if too many patients die within 1 year after open heart surgery, which is what happened in this case. So this article that was in ProPublica described the situation this way. A father came out of heart transplant surgery at the New Jersey hospital only able to say a few words, usually about how much he was suffering. Yet the family ran into resistance every time they asked the doctors for a DNR. That means do not resuscitate order, okay? Meaning they didn't want the hospital to intervene, okay? If the father had another heart attack, they didn't want the hospital to come in and try to save his life again. In other words, let him die in peace. But the doctors were very resistant. They would say things like, why are you giving up on your father so soon? Look, he can still blink his eye. Look, he can still say a word. Give him some more time. He's coming along. The guilt trip, because that's really what it was, the guilt trip worked for months as the hospital got closer to its statistical goal of keeping him alive 1 year after the transplant. But also, as the father and the family continued to suffer. So finally, the family just out and out demanded a DNR. And a short time later, the father did have a heart attack and he died without any intervention. So that family's nightmare finally ended. So Jill, here's what I want to discuss a little bit more today. I mean, here's the question that families don't like to ask themselves. It's very important. They really need to do it. It's always tough to do. But here's the question you've got to ask yourself. How can our family avoid a nightmare like that where our final wishes are not honored? So I think you need a couple of things. Have you ever had a conversation like that in your family?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a nightmare because you can have a DNR, you can have everyone agree to it, you can have it filed, and then it still doesn't get followed because there are these little technicalities. You've got to have, you know, if you are committed to having your way and having it sorted out beforehand, because that's before then the other family members intervene and say, you know what, dad / mom wouldn't have really wanted this, so let's do blah blah. Anyhow, what you really need to do is have this sorted up front, and one of the most important things is to communicate with the hospital ethicist, because all hospitals have, you know, beforehand, just to make sure that whatever the particular rules of that organization are followed, so that if that situation occurs, you don't just then start having to reopen negotiations.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And so let me walk the listeners through the process here. You do need that conversation, first of all, with your mom and dad. No, this is never an easy conversation. You can throw in a couple of glasses of wine. It might help. There's no guarantee, but you do have to sit down together. And you have to ask, look, if the worst happened, you have to be very frank about this. If the worst thing happened, and that really means, you know, there's no chance, no hope that you'd ever regain cognition, what would you want us to do? Would you want to live on in a vegetative state or not? Or would you want to be resuscitated or not? So when you finally got that answer, and you put your finger on a very key thing, when you've got an answer that's clear for all people involved, it can't just be you and your brother, but your other brother doesn't want, is completely against it, and the other sister is completely against. That's not an agreement. That's you and your mother, perhaps, but not the whole family. When everybody's clear about it, then you're ready to do two things. Get a living will. Now, that spells out the wishes of your parent or yourself. You get a living will, spells that out in detail. You can get that from an estate lawyer. He's going to charge you something around $2,000, but here's a tip. Go to caringinfo.org, caringinfo.org. Go there. You can get a legal form for a living will valid in each of the 50 states, and you fill it out yourself, and you've got your living will. Next, that's not enough.
That's right.
You need a power of attorney to think for you if you're not able to do that. That moment can come. So in my case, it's my wife, Carol, has my power of attorney. I have hers. That's the idea. A lawyer will charge something like $1,000 for a power of attorney. I think that's a good investment. You need that power of attorney. So, Jill, here's the key. As you forecast here, you need to do this before the family faces a crisis. I can't emphasize that enough. Before the crisis. Doctors have told me horror stories about families without living wills, without powers of attorney. They end up screaming at each other, literally, at the bedside of the dying loved one. You don't want that for the last moments of someone's life.
You would think.
Or the family's existence.
I said you would think. It becomes such an emotional thing that no one's actually intentionally. If you sit everyone down with a glass of wine prior to and say you wouldn't want that, would you? I'm not going to say to a man, but 93% at least will say that won't happen to us. We're cool.
But it will.
It does.
I talked to a hospital chaplain who told me, she said, look, sometimes I'm not sure if I'm a spiritual advisor or a referee. So how about this story? Now, this is an amazing story. It describes a sad end of a story because two sisters actually couldn't come to an agreement with their mother about what was about to happen. So I'm at a very elegant lunch in Beverly Hills, and by chance, I'm seated next to the wife of a very prominent California politician. Never met the woman before in my life, but somehow she'd heard I was writing a book about healthcare. So she turns to me and she says, I killed my mother. I said, oh, really? Pass the salt. I said, nonchalantly as I could, how did you do that? How did you kill your mother? She said, well, she was really in pain. She didn't want to go on. And my phone rang. It was a really beautiful day. And she said, today's the day. Come on over. So I went over to her house and I put on her favorite music, and I made it very comfortable as I could in the sofa. And then we got the pills that we had been stashing for this event. And she took all her pills, and then she just slowly faded away. She said she died peacefully. She died peacefully with dignity. She died the way she wanted to go. And I said, oh, that's interesting. What did your family think of her decision? And she said, well, we didn't tell my sister, because if she had heard about this, she would have driven over that day. She would have tried to stop it. And I said, well, how does your sister feel about it now? And she said, well, you know, I'm sure she's very upset. But, you know, frankly, we haven't talked since then. So they have it. I mean, the mother and the daughters couldn't get together. A mother passes, and a family goes to pieces. The family relationship is over. You don't want that to happen in your family. These are difficult conversations. It's stuff you don't want to think about. But it's very important to get things in order, to sort it out, as Jill says, sort it out ahead of time before the family crisis. And at least the end of life will be as peaceful as it can.
And I'm going to add something to that, because it's, you know, this presumes that you're going to be able to get everybody on the same page. I had a mother who was very specific about what she wanted. She was absolutely, totally clear, totally. So, and she relied upon me as her eldest to make sure that no matter what anybody said, if there was static, even though everything was in place, if anyone went back on it, you know, that was the assignment. And
right.
There are people, you know, P.S., again, not everybody agrees, not everyone sees the world the same way. You know this in a family way, way earlier on. So sometimes you do have to just make sure that whatever side arrangement you reach, if that is necessary, is, again, sanctioned. Not sanctioned, but that you are protected when you mm-hmm. follow your loved one's wishes. Because
right, exactly.
Sometimes...
So you're talking about two things there. You're making sure that when the agreement is made, and you're right. I mean, you may have only half the family really siding with the mother's decision. There may be the other half not happy about it. But if the decision is made in the open, then everybody at least knows, hey, remember, Mom said it, and here it is in black and white. Second thing is, the wishes of the loved one can change over time. This has happened where people had one form of a living will, and they wanted to adjust it as they moved on in life. If you just do this and forget it, then people can say 5 years later or 7 years later, no, that's not what he was thinking.
Yep.
Now,
right.
You know, you're right. So you have to keep that in mind as well. And, you know, I would kind of say if things are discussed in the open, not every time you guys get together, for a family gathering, you don't have to bring it up. But it isn't bad if it somehow, especially as the person gets older in life, it isn't bad at all for the conversation to come up, you know, once a year. You know, hey, Dad, you still okay with the way things are spelled out here? Okay, I'll make sure Joey knows that. That's the kind of thing. The worst is going in unprotected, nothing in writing, disagreement among the family about what he really wants or she really wants, and no chance to communicate with that person. That's the nightmare that all of us can avoid,
right?
With just a little forethought and a couple of glasses of wine, I guess.
and also the awareness that you can't always you can do the forethought, you can do that, but you know, with the way that you started the show, with the awareness that hospitals, in some cases, are incentivized to keep it going anyway. You know, that's the part that you really don't. It's like,
yeah,
you see those little shark fins, just how about don't go in there?
Yeah, that surprised me. And this hospital that's under investigation apparently has a pattern. It's a hospital that takes older patients, and therefore their chance of having a higher death rate than the national average is high. It looks like from the investigation, a protective measure they're doing there is for the nurses and the doctors to brush aside the first, you know, attempts for the family to get a DNR, a do not resuscitate. They just kind of guilt them out of it. That's a shame. You just don't want that.
No.
I mean, ethically, morally, forget legally, okay? But ethically, morally, the hospital should be there honoring the patient and the family's wishes here. Where you run into a lot of trouble is if there isn't agreement among the family. Then you're stuck in that chaplain's position where he's just a referee in a food fight while someone's lying there not able to speak for themselves. That's the nightmare. That's the family nightmare we can all avoid.
Thank you, Frank, the healthcare detective and senior advisor to healthcare.com. Send your questions or concerns about finding affordable healthcare to healthcaredetective@robinhoodradio.com. Frank will try to address as many of your questions as he can on future broadcasts. Also, look for his book, Your Best Healthcare Now, available online, in store, wherever fine books are sold, and also on my desk.